Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kick Fighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you are at the most efficient way to get the podcast by entering Warman Kick Fighting Show into the iTunes search engine. So I'm going to go ahead and jump right into it. This card is on one thing and one thing only, the super event for Glory Kickboxing that took place, Glory Collision 2 took place in Holland over this past weekend, just 2 days ago from before I started recording, with Rico Verhoeven and Badahari going at it for a second time. So, first of all, I will break down the card and then I'll talk about some of the significant numbers out there as far as pay-per-view goes and as far as the viewership and attendance, which was 31,000, and it really was a special day in kickboxing. But let's go ahead and start at the top. Rico Verhoeven defeats Badahari by TKO leg injury. And I will go ahead and say it, despite the leg injury, this is one of the top five fights I've ever seen in the history of kickboxing, and I've been watching a lot of kickboxing. There are so many narratives that make this fight special. There are so many narratives that make this fight great. But one of the big ones I'll talk about is the most underlying one, the biggest one. And I'd say the biggest narrative is Rico Verhoeven has two victories over Badahari, and he's never beaten him. And I think that that is significant because Badahari had the fast start and the first fight, clearly winning round one. Round two gets going, Rico starts to come on, and then the fight is called because of an injury there. Afterwards, Rico was really upset. You know, it felt like he was coming on. He wanted to get to those portions of the rounds where he does better because Rico's had slow starts before. You know, he has, you know, even as recent as, I'd say his, it wasn't a collision event, but the last time that he fought in December, I'm thinking about his history in total, but one fight in particular that comes to mind is his fight with, had to fix something on my computer. One fight that particularly comes to mind is his fight with Ben Sadiq, where Ben Sadiq had the early first round offensive success, and then Rico was able to turn it on later in the fight and, of course, score the KO in the fifth round. Because of that, it had a lot of intrigue into the next fight. Badr, of course, has his, you know, out-of-fight trouble in terms of, you know, his run-ins with, you know, with the law and, you know, jail time and so on. He's had to rebuild his body like three times over his fight career in terms of everything was good in his physical peak. He'd go to jail, he'd get skinny, he'd come out and get back to his physical peak. That's happened several times throughout his career. With that said, he's still one of the all-time biggest stars in the history of kickboxing, if not number one. I think I'll go as far as to say he's number one. I don't think I've ever known a kickboxer to be more famous than Badahari is. So when the fight was made for the second time and had plenty of time to sell it, 3 months in advance, 3 months, 4 months. We've been talking about it. That both guys had nice, long camps to prepare. Now, again, I train fighters for a living, so, you know, fight camps are what they are. They're not always everything went perfect in the gym every day. Sometimes you got a nagging injury and you work through it. Sometimes you've got, you know, a day where your left hand's working better than your right, and another day where your kicks are working better than your boxing. It's just kind of how camps work. But they have this time. They get together. We have this brilliant, brilliant production by the Glory Kickboxing team. It was a boxing-type feel in terms of the production of it. The walk-in, how they showed the guys in the back, how they showed them before they walked out before the crowd, how they kept going to the crowd to see the crowd's response before they'd even walked out. Then both music selections. I just felt like everything about it was huge, like shivering huge, like I'm watching something special huge. It really was a different experience watching these guys and a very special moment in kickboxing. So we go out and we go into round one. They are kickboxing strong, both guys exchanging very heavy, both guys landing good offense. Then after a rear leg inside low kick that I think Rico does better than anybody on the planet, there's an exchange, but I'd say what I call my gym is Badr had the shoulder. So as you're exchanging, the person who has their shoulder in the middle of the other person's chest, that person is more likely to go down. Okay, so if we're exchanging and you find yourself reaching for me with your left and right hands as you're letting it go, if your shoulder's closer to the middle of my chest, I like my chances of winning the exchange because I've got your hips split. I like my, you know, my hips split your hips. I feel like I'm going to win those exchanges. So that's what happened in that moment. Rico goes down and, you know, definitely went down to a knee, shooken up, kind of more like mad at himself than anything, but still hurt. They do the count. After the counter's over with, here comes Botter. Like, he comes out, clean shots down the middle, going to rip behind the guard after he gets the guard into the middle to defend. He's landing good offense. And then all of a sudden, about 30 seconds left in the round, Rico starts to get his composure. Rico had a mean jab all night, a snappy jab. The work that he's been doing with Tyson Fury and his boxing team has really showed up. Really started snapping up a jab, doing some straight shots, some teeps. He did some things to get himself out of the round. Gets out of the round with a 10-8 loss in the round, but showing the signs of, I could still come back and win this thing. Round two, he sends the message immediately. Jab, jab, two. One, two, heavy. Right down the pipe. Gets in his face. He was so aggressive and mean right in the opening portion of that round. Like, he really brought the fight. This guy can fight. With that aggression, with that offensive momentum, he started to score, and Botter started to wait. Wasn't scoring as much, wasn't finding his big shots as much, just really kind of looking for his avenue as Rico started to turn on. Then all of a sudden, Botter started to find those shots, started to have some exchanges where, again, if you miss, Botter does a really good job of following with power shots after you. Like, he's just a good, all-time great KO hitter. Like he finds his moments to land big offense on you. But Rico was strong and steady, was able to take them, get back to work with his own boxing, his own low kick game, was able to score. Round two on all five cards go to your champion, Rico Verhaeven. We're going round three. Again, both guys exchanging good offense, big offensive flow, and then in a switch stance that he'd been playing with all night, he threw a combination, put the right kick, right hand to the body and the southpaw, and the left kick came up high, scores a knockdown on Rico. Rico this time definitely looks a little bit more hurt, but still able to go. Botter comes after him on the, you know, looking for the kill, does a spinning hook kick. It lands weird. He is injured and goes down, and he loses the fight for the second time by TKO injury. And it's just, it was almost like, I think he was more mad at himself than his leg. Like, I don't think it was a situation where he felt like his body failed him. I think it was a situation where he's like, what if I did a different strike? You know what I'm saying? Like everything going on in his mind is just, I could have done that differently and I would have won by KO. He really was. In the last fight, you can make the argument, if you wanted to, that Botter was starting to fade or that Rico was coming on. Both of those, you could make the argument when he had the arm injury. This time, Botter was in control. He was looking to go for the kill. He, you know, go back. You know, they kept calling it the Lecco Buster because it was one of his most popular KOs. But that spinning hook kick, he was trying to get it going. He just couldn't find the right moment. He couldn't find the big shot. He could not get what he needed to you know, win the fight on the spectacular technique. But that's one part of it. The worst part of it is that the technique he tried has now injured him, and that was a result of the loss. You know, x-rays have come back. I guess he had a ligaments torn in the ankle. It's just, it's one of those things where it's like, there is no argument in the world that he won it out this time. You know what I'm saying? It's just mental. And I mean mental by the way the English use it. It's crazy if that was your mentality. He clearly was in control and almost in position to get a KO. And not to mention, let's think, you know, if we want to talk scorecards, you're looking at a guy who had two 10-8 rounds and a five-round fight. So he really was looking good, you know, as far as going the distance. Like, he was in good shape as far as winning this whole thing. But nothing you can do about it. The injury is the result of it. It just, the feel of it, the excitement, the production, everything about it really did make it the event of the year, but it also made this the fight of the year, in my personal opinion. No other fight gave me the feel that I got. Now, there are some exciting fights out there, you know, there are some that I'm going to mention, but for me, this was my fight of the year. It had that excitement, it had that skill, and again, it builds. I don't know how exciting the third fight will be for it. Clearly, it's going to be big because it's these two, but there are other narratives that are more important here. Both guys have signed multi-fight deals with Glory. And if we're going to have a future in kickboxing, the big advantage that we had from having the K1 World Grand Prix format was it gave some new upstart, you know, Remy Bonjasky, Gokhan Saki is, you know, guy. It gave them the opportunity to come in and compete at a high level in a tournament, get matched up with a guy who, you know, has better experience and you know, more of a name, beat that name and then move forward. It was a way for them to make their name off of old names. You know, so first you put yourself on the map with a tournament win. Think Daniel Gita, his K1, you know, debut. He was in a tournament. Sergey Lysenko was the one he met in the final. He beat him by low kicks. He beat everybody by low kicks that night. Then afterwards, everybody found out about this guy, Gita. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was already killing in Romania, already beating high-level guys. But that tournament put him on the map. Then all of a sudden, you look at his K1 career. You look at the epic fights that he had. The Gokhan Saki fight was also, you know, it was a lot of fun. And, you know, some of the stoppages he was brought in to Karatanov, and he had that low kick stoppage. He was able to build his name off of guys who already had names. And I think that that is what we're looking for. Gokhan Saki the same. After winning that regional tournament, he beat Freddie Camayo. That one really put him on the map as far as an all-action exciting guy. But the first round of the tournament that year, if I remember correctly, he was able to beat, either that year or the year before it, he was able to beat Ruslan Karev, who had already had built his name because he had some great tournament ones and he had some wins over Botter. So it's like the opportunity for the new to beat the old came up. That is so important right now as we move forward, because if we're going to sustain the buzz and the appeal, I felt like when I sat down and I watched social media that day, the entire kickboxing world, the entire fight world, guys that I know that mostly do MMA media and so on, all of them were committed to talking about this fight. And the people that were behind it, the people that watched it, you know, even when there was the injury, everybody was like, you got to watch this. You know, I've got, you know, some of my fighters, I've got this fight room for my team. And, you know, we talk on Facebook. And one of the guys who's an MMA guy, for, you know, mostly, but watches everything, he goes, hey, are you guys watch this Badr Hari Rico fight? If not, change it to it right now. It was that kind of a buzz. It was that kind of a vent. And if we are going to move forward from having everybody's eyes on us, the thing that we've got to follow up with more than anything is we've got to have some of the younger stars have the opportunity to take out the old stars. It's very important. That's very important. So the fact that both guys signed multi-fight deals is huge, huge for, you know, I think Botter signed through 3 years. It's huge for kickboxing. And again, he's only going to fight like once, twice a year, but he's Badr Hari, you know, and Rico's only going to fight like once, twice a year, but it's Rico Verhierven. They are your connection from the old to the new. And one of the things that makes Rico such a huge superstar in boxing and kickboxing, in the kickboxing world, I should say, the time with boxing, of course, helps as far as his brand and his, you know, the final product of who he is and the time they spent there. But the thing that makes Rico so important is his championship is the bridge between the K1 age going into the glory age. Very, very important. The reason why I say that is if you look at his resume, the first night that he wins the four-man tournament in Chicago, I was there, he was able to beat Gokhan Saki and Daniel Gita, the two guys who you would have put up above him before that tournament. You know, now, of course, there was that, you know, questionable knockdown, but ideally he beat two guys from that era. Then he has a win over Errol Zimmerman, beats another guy from that era. Has the rematch win over Gita, beats another guy from that era. It's so important that he's able to get these guys who we know because of the K1 history. It's so important that he's able to get them and beat them. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was able to, K1 just ends, glory takes over, he becomes the it guy, no longer the prince, he becomes the king. He is able to bridge the gap into the new world. And yet, Badr Hari continued to be a star in the sport, making money on some smaller promotions before he came back and did his thing with glory. They put on a great, exciting fight. You know, the showman, the everything, the mystique, everything about Badr, that comes into play. These guys do it again. The fact that they're going to be around for three years or for five fights or whatever it's going to be, it's so huge because it means someone who is on the roster right now has the opportunity to beat one of those guys and make a name for themselves. It is so important. So we'll see what we have next year. But as I mentioned before, the crowd, the feel, the effect, the urgency that was shown in the fight. There were so many stories to this. One of my favorite stories, I watch a lot of professional wrestling, and one of the guys, Lance Storm, he's now a teacher, he used to be a wrestler, he said something important. He was talking about a women's match, and he says, the important thing about this match wasn't just that it was a good performance, that both girls put on a good performance, put on a good show, and then you had a satisfactory end. He said, the most important part of this is the crowd wanted the girl who ended up winning the championship to win. They said it's so important that the crowd wanted Rhea Ripley to win the title from the longtime champion. He goes, that's what made it great, was the crowd wanted a result. This fight was made great because the crowd wanted a result. It's another story in it. So many people were excited for Barra. So many people were excited for Rico. So many people were drawn into the action. Even before the card starts, you have Joseph Valtellini and John Grisham. They're sitting there, they're talking, and he goes, who's here? Who's going for Rico? Who's going for Barra? And you get a really good crowd pop. Their walkout, you had a really good crowd pop. The people in the crowd were invested in the winners, and that's very important. Very, very special day for kickboxing. Very, very special day for both of those athletes. We move down into Luis Tavares for Stefani Spurugi. Stefani is a good fighter. He was able to win a round. He's got some awkward angles, but the killer for him was Luis Tavares had such a hot start, and he ripped the body like just a great combination to the body, you know, 2-3 shots, and down goes Stefani. Stefani was strong, was able to get back up, was able to fight back into it, and I think three of the judges, 29-27, gave him the last round, I want to say it was. But, man, Luis Tavares, he is doing very well for himself. You know, he'd been winning close several times, and he's been pretty active for Glory since he's returned. But this is a guy who went down to body shots, Artem Vakhadov, leaves, wins his way back into the organization, as I mentioned last podcast. Good run in Infusion, where he won the title at both light heavyweight and heavyweight, if I remember correctly. Was able to fight on the Premier League organization that was run by Melvin Manhoef. He just is a good fighter, and this is an important win to keep him moving forward. Spurugi, still a good fighter, still a good guy to have in the division. I think that he's got some good fights that he can make with a lot of people. Just Luis Tavares was on form, was able to get the win this night. Muhammad Jiraiya gets victory over Massaro Glunder, and here's the important part of this. You guys are just starting to see a little bit of what made Muhammad Jiraiya one of the elite prospects moving up in the sport. Like, you're really starting to see it. You know, like, it's just here, Glunder, who's, you know, kind of getting acclimated to fighting at a bigger weight. You can see it on his body, a little bit, you know, a little bit more gut. But, man, both of these guys had some great exchanges. Round two, Glunder was landing some smooth knees, both the jumping knee and the step knee off of his boxing. But Jiraiya really let go of his clean punches. He could throw them straight. He could throw them around the corner. He could put it, you know, he adds a low kick on it. He puts a low kick at the rear leg. Muhammad Jiraiya, the volume that made him special. If you look at the fights that put him on the map back when he was fighting rookies and he's working his way up the Glory ranks, he was a volume guy, you know, and I said it on this show many times before. I credit Lucien Corbin, who started a special style of pad holding that had chain combinations where you're doing 8, 9, 10, 12, 13, 14 shot combos. And sometimes people are like, man, you don't do that in a fight. And then all of a sudden, here comes Muhammad Jiraiya, and here comes Ilias Belaid, and these dudes are a generation of fighter that only knew hitting pads like that. They didn't know hitting pads the simple way. They knew hitting pads in the way that developed long volume. And they went out there and they started fighting people like that with these 8, 9, 10 combinations, shot combinations. Muhammad Jiraiya showed that skill. And though Glunder was strong and he was in the pocket and he was throwing back, some of this fight actually early kind of reminded me of his fight back in the day when he went against Masaki Nori, where Nori had played behind the guard and he was able to get off offense and he split him with the knee. Glunder was able to have some success whenever Jiraiya was earmuffed up. But Jiraiya really turned it on. He was able to eat the shots. Clearly, he, you know, much better at, you know, much more at home fighting at lightweight, you know, 154 pounds or 70 kgs. Jiraiya's back. He's starting to get back on form. You're starting to see what made him special. And again, he technically should have won his, you know, last fight on the scorecard, and then you had like 38 seconds because of the cut. You know, if the ref and the doctor had just taken into account there's only 38 seconds, he would have had that win, you know, as far as the numbers, because there's open scoring. So Dry's getting back on form. Really good stuff for him. Glunder, still really good, and he's got to get acclimated to the weight. And, you know, he won his first fight, so we'll see what happens moving forward with him and Jiraiya. But really good stuff by Jiraiya. Plus, a huge crowd got to see this guy perform and put in those combinations. And Muhammad Jiraiya is 23 years old. I feel like I've been talking about him forever, but he's 23 years old. So good stuff by Jiraiya. Zachariah Zoghari gets a victory over Asa Tenpao. The story of this fight is you had a veteran, savvy guy who was able to bite down on his mouthpiece and really throw chain combinations starting to the body and ripping upstairs. He had a good well-timed low kick that, you know, threw Asa off here and there. But it's his volume and his ability to move forward. I think round one, Asa really didn't get into his flow. It was more Zoghari pushing the pace, throwing the combos, and Asa looking for moments here and there. Then all of a sudden, in round two, Asa Tenpao started to find something. He was finding a straight right hand. He found a left hook off the break. He was able to disrupt Zoghari with good single power shots. He was able to win some of the exchanges. Zoghari, at the very end of the second round, stole it back by going on this, you know, 12 to 13 shot combo where he just started letting it go. Hands, punches, knees, everything, and he just kind of let it go. All five judges gave Zoghari the round, but Asa Tenpao really found something in that second round. Round three, Zoghari had more offense. Pao started to look a little bit tired. Not sure if he was, because I've seen him do that in fights where he's looked tired early, and then he still put out really good output. But Zoghari was able to put more offense together, really let his hands go at the end of the round. He wins 30-27 on all three of your scorecards. Zoghari, important because, again, huge audience watched this fight. He put on an exciting show. He was a showman several times. He got hit with a spinning back kick, and then he just kind of hooked it. He stopped, took a moment, and did like a little golf clap for Asa. And then later in the round, he really wanted to get into some exchanges, so he started pumping up the crowd, and then he let his hands go. Really, really fun stuff by Zoghari. But the most important thing for Asa is round number two, because this is a huge step up for Asa in terms of the opposition that he's met. Probably since Carlton Liu, this is the best guy that he's fought skill-wise. And I think that to have those moments in round two and to be there and go the distance with a guy like Zoghari, who just, you know, won by cleanup in his last fight, it tells Asa that, okay, I've now felt it and I'm still alive. And Rigo Verheerven, I was looking at my kickboxing documentary in 2011. I interviewed him right after he beats Saki and right after he beats Kita. And he talked about how, you know, everybody's like, when are you going to fight Bader? When are you going to fight, you know, Zimmerman? When are you going to fight all these guys, Jimmy Shelton, whatever? And he goes, his coach slows him down. And he goes, hey, wait a minute, hold on. He was like, I want you to sit down, work on these guys. He was like, he had a fight with Jimmy Shelton. He said, Jimmy Shelton is probably one of the greatest ever. He was like, if Shimmy is as big as he is, and he said Shimmy couldn't hurt him, but he couldn't beat Shimmy. But he says, but if he is that big and that strong and that good, and he hit me that clean, and I'm still there, he goes, I can do this. Like, that loss told him, I can do this. I can win this heavyweight crown. Like, I can be one of the better guys. He had to experience the high level to know he could do it. I think when Asa looks back at this fight, particularly round two, he has to say, you know, that guy's an awesome fighter. That guy is an awesome fighter. But I think I could do this. You know what I'm saying? I think I could be one of the best guys on the planet. I felt him. I was still there. I had offensive success. Let me go ahead and get another camp. Let me go ahead and fight some other high-level guys and get that fight again. Really good story. And that's the story I feel for Asa and the story I feel for Zoghari. Zoghari, in position, exciting fighter, put on a show for a crowd. Asa Tenpao, first real huge step-up fight against an international guy since working in Glory. Huge step-up fight. He's had step-ups before, but a really big step-up. Asa put in good work. Good show there. Alex Pereira defeats Ertuğrul Bayrak by KO. He is, I said it before, and I will say it again, he is making his resume right now. Right now is the time where you are going to wonder where you were or remember where you were when you look back and you say, man, there was a year where he won by KO. This is one of the most special kickboxing years. I put it up there with Andy Risty's, you know, big year. Andy Risty still, that year was bigger when Andy Risty, you know, won the Glory Championship. And the guys that he went against that year, that's still probably the biggest for me. But, like, the year that he's had, where he has not only been winning and defending his crown, but he's been winning by KO. And he moved up in weight class, and he fought for the interim light heavyweight title. And he, you know, it's at 209 pounds, and he weighed 205 pounds, and he won by KO. Here he is against, you know, Urchikor Bayrak, who has the victory over Donovan Weiss, still a very, very talented guy, was slow to get going this time. I think he was trying to maybe see what Pereira had, and he would pick it up later. A lot of people thought that his body language and his movement wasn't that of a high-level guy, like he wasn't confident. But Alex, from the very opening bell, was trying to kill this guy. And he came out super offense. And again, Bayrak had moments here and there, but just the overall offensive volume that was coming from Alex Pereira. And of course, he's a left hook killer, puts the right hand in the belly, comes upstairs with the left hook. It scores right before the 3-minute clock. Knockdown, referee was correct to call it. It was a clean KO. Alex wins again. He is building his legacy. Right now, you're going to look back on this era of kickboxing and say, Alex was the best I'd ever seen. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have an opportunity to say that by the end of things if he keeps winning by KO. Because he's in a division where, historically, what we're talking, you know, Tyrone Spong back in the day. But Tyrone wasn't there very long. Not as long as Pereira is now, but he's, you know, had him back in the day, Nathan Carnage Corbett. You have to put him in that conversation. Those three, international, those three guys, all around that weight class, you got to put them in there. And not to mention, he's still fighting at 209, and maybe he'll do heavyweight down the road. There's so much that you can get from Alex Pereira. Really good stuff. He moves on. Ariel Machado. Sorry, I missed one. Sergey Adamchuk defeats Alexei Elianov by split decision. Back and forth, that could have gone either way. You know, both guys had good offensive moments. Sergey Adamchuk's really feeling good, like really doing better. Confidence is up. You know, if you look at, you know, his title defense, Petch is a real hard style. And so when they fought in Houston, I was like, man, that's a tough style to get used to. But I thought that he was trying to find his moment, but he just couldn't find it. And that was a really small ring, and there was a lot of holds, and it was, you know, that kind of stuff came into play. But if you look at that, you know, he fought extremely well against Abraham Vidalis, you know, throwing his wide shots. Didn't hold or clinch much at all. Just believed in his power, believed in throwing combinations heavy. Did a really, really good job. Adamchuk did a really, really good job. Here, same thing. Ulyanov, of course, probably a little disappointed because he wanted to fight for a title. Things didn't work out for him, you know, as far as visa goes. But he wanted to compete, prove that he's one of the best guys in the world. And that's what he had. He met Adamchuk, and he lost a split decision. No shame there. Close fight. Moments for each. Adamchuk finally landed his, rolling thunder kick pretty clean. You know, it was just a really good kickboxing bout between two guys that really, really wanted it, who wanted to stay in title contention. Ulyanov will be fine. He'll be right back in that title hunt, and Adamchuk wins, so he is already scheduled in Utrecht next year to go against Petch for the title. Ariel Machado defeats Michael Duke, was able to score a couple of knockdowns. One in particular, he came around the earmuffs and scored really well, scored a knockdown. His power punches was on point. Duke, you know, still had his moments, you know, stood strong, looked for a left hook, scored it. Machado looked like he'd slowed a little bit in the third. But Ariel Machado, good return to division, one of the better guys, you know, out there at light heavyweight. Some fun fights to make with him, really good stuff. He wins and moves forward. Itaker Sean beats Zhang Li by majority decision. Scored a knockdown in this one, 30-26 on most of the cards. And one card had a 28-28, as Li had really come on after the knockdown, winning two of the rounds. One of the judges felt, but the others had it a sweep. Itaker Sean, you know, he is at a place where he is trying to beat the elite guys. That's the next step for him. Beating that top group. So this win puts him in position to get another one of those fights. And we'll see what happens when he possibly meets a guy like, you know, John C. or you know, whoever. We move forward. Antonio Plazabot gets a victory over Jafar Wilnes by split decision. And Wilnes has been on the end of some close ones in his career. You know, he's a good fighter. But Antonio Plazabot is really coming into his own. His kickboxing is very good. Growing into his heavyweight body, his smooth and his fluidity. Of course, you know, Wilnes, walk you down, get in the pocket, combinations and low kicks, wear you down with body shots. But the biggest thing is he gets that pressure on you. He's like a stronger version of Wendell Roche. And, but Plazabot, just better to the punch, better the kickboxing, really good stuff. Good win by Antonio Plasbot. We will see him move forward and be a player in the heavyweight division. Donovan Weiss, who's going to be a player in the, you know, middleweight division, probably in line to go against Alex Pereira next, 21, 22, 23 years old, like those, as young as he is, these are the years that we're going through for him. He gets a victory over Cesar Almeida, was able to score a knockdown very early in the fight with the hook. Almeida had some good moments and battled back, like he showed the skill. But Donovan Weiss, who's got some really clean kickboxing, him and Wilderness put on one of the better kickboxing fights of the year. Donovan Weiss is really showing good skill, and I'm excited that he's doing good and he's winning, and I want to see another young guy emerge and be a player in the division. This sport's all about young stars, and it helps that, you know, as I mentioned before, that Alex Pereira is so young. You know, we've got young people to take this sport forward, and a lot of eyes saw our young stars. So good job by Donovan Weiss, and good job by Cesar Almeida. You'll be back in the game. You bounce back from the knockdown. So we'll see more of you in the kickboxing world down the road, and Donovan Weiss is in position. Nordin Mahedin gets a victory over Jihad Kapanek. Expert round split decision. Just a clean kickboxing fight. Both guys did good stuff, but when it went to the extra, Nordin did just a little bit more. You know, it was, I think there was a knockdown, and then after that, Shahid Kapanek was able to get it back on the scorecard to get it to a draw. The extra round was a split decision. It's just a close fight between two legit heavyweights. Real good stuff, like real good stuff by both guys. Nordin gets the win. We'll see more of him. He's doing all right. He's having a good year. Ulrich Bokham gets a victory over Kevin Van Herkeren, 30-27 on most of the cards, 29-28 on the other ones. Kevin Van Herkeren really tried to, you know, he had the fight with Matt Baker, and he brought a good offensive flow and good combinations, and he really brought the fight to him. Ulrich is the opposite. Ulrich Bokham, very, very talented guy. He's going to bite down in his mouthpiece and battle right back, walk down, land big shots with his boxing. Did a good job. Gets the victory here, and I'm excited to have another guy in the middleweight division for us to talk about. And then got the night kicked off with Becca Irwin, and she gets a victory over Yi Zhu by split decision. Zhu started off great, threw in combinations, threw in power, you know, walked Irwin down. Irwin was able to score in kickboxing, you know, with, you know, boxing and kicks and then moving out of the way. She was able to score in spots pretty well. Yi Zhu did such a great job in the early going. Then all of a sudden, Irwin got it going. Round two, the teeps down the middle, the straight shots down the middle. She had this nice little angle off to keep Zhu from being able to come at her with the offensive straight line flurries that she had. Irwin was able to pick it up, get an international win on her belt. And again, she's just got to keep building them. You know what I'm saying? Got to keep building those kind of wins. She goes 3-0 in glory this year. She had signed right after she was 18 years old. She just turned 19. She gets to go and be on this big card. And just a really, really good night. So we had a little bit of everything in this card. So, you know, young prospects, veterans showing that they belong in the division, fighters staying in title contention, championship defenses, and then the drama of Rico versus Botter. We really had a great day in kickboxing. So if you get a chance, watch this card full. And if you have Fight Pass, you can watch the top four fights for free. You know, Rico Verhoeven and Botter Hari is on there. So go check it out and really just watch it for anything, just for the walkout. You know what I'm saying? Like it was an awesome, awesome feel. And it was so much fun. You know, it was so much fun to see how many people were into it, how the crowd responded, the production. It was just great. 31,000 spectators, as I mentioned before. 3.5 million viewers in Holland alone. 53% of the market share for Dutch live television artists. So 50% of the people in the country were tuned in to watch this fight. You know, had the sponsors, it had the attention, so many people. I can't tell you, the social media world had taken over. It was all about Glory, it was all about Rico, and I'm telling you, even my people who are boxing primarily, are MMA primarily, they fell in love with this fight. They found this fight and fell in love with it. So, great action, great stuff. Thank you all for listening to my podcast. I'll be back next week with my awards for the year. I'll go ahead and put a post out just to see what everybody's lists are. But, you know, Fighter of the Year, Vent of the Year, Youngster of the Year, or Newcomer of the Year, however you want to put it, Performance of the Year, all that will come into play. So thanks, everybody, for listening. I'm so excited about kickboxing. What a great card. I love the sport, and I'm so blessed to be a part of it. And I, like I said before, I do this podcast for free, and I'm grateful to have you guys on. I will still do that 300th anniversary episode I've been meaning to get around to. I just haven't, just been busy, and I'm still working things out with TJ DeSantos as far as being on that platform. But, man, I'm just grateful for everybody that's taken the time to listen to kickboxing and be a part of it. God bless, and I wish you all the best. Peace.